Beloved listeners, and welcome to an hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host today. Yes, we're in for a treat, because you're probably wondering, Advanced Living, what the heck is that? Well, it's the intention to help support you to improve your quality of life. For a bit longer version of what that means, I pray daily, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives. Why? So we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yeah, that's what we're up to. So welcome on board. And of course, we want to thank our sponsor, the AdvancedLiving.com website that features the Comfort Technology, a tiny plug-in item, looks like a digital clock. We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, because when you plug it in, it is like having a holy person show up and meditate in your space. It just brings a beautiful harmonized energy that helps lift stress, improve quality of life. So take a look, AdvancedLiving.com, when you have a moment. And now, yes, today, we're in for a treat. Part two, a wonderful guest that was with us on August 28th, Bill Eager. And yes, he is every bit his name because he has gone all over the world. He's studied. He's written 10 books, sold over 1 million copies, trained with leading authorities on alternative health care, holistic living, and yoga. And he is just a fountain of wisdom. And we got partway through his book, Thrive Inside. Yes, and why? Well, because it feels good, and beyond that, because it helps to thrive outside. So thrive all around. And Bill, he's a certified yoga instructor, yoga nidra facilitator, Reiki practitioner, energy healer, teaches workshops around the world, a wonderful family man. He may tell us a story about his wonderful dog, Sage, today, for the dog lovers out there. And his book, just Thrive Inside, brings a wonderful weaving together of teachings from many spiritual traditions. And the tapestry opens the door for personal growth and transformation, regardless of your background or your spiritual path. It's non-denominational. It's there just to help support you on your path as a human being moving ahead, wanting to have a better and better life. And he shares a lot of personal experience and dialogue with great teachers, including Guru Dev, Yogi Amrit Desai, who I got to meet and do darshan with personally, Dr. Alberto Villoldo, A.G. Monahan, Master Stephen Coe, oh my gosh, just the list goes on. Ram Dass, BKS Ingar, of Ingar Yoga, or Iyengar yoga, and then, of course, the one that most of us have heard of, the Dalai Lama. This gentleman has spent time with him. So if you're going through change in your life, and who hasn't, if there's not enough change in your pocket, and you want more change that way, too, we are going to tune in and carry on with part two of Thrive Inside with Bill Eager. So welcome aboard, Bill.
Thank you very much, Ken. And by the way, I love your opening prayer. It got me excited. Beautiful.
Good. Yes, exactly. It's like, let's plug in.
We might mention already, since I think you just did arrangements with Yogi Amritasai to have him come on your program in November.
Yes, thank you so much, folks. Be sure to tune in Saturday, November 20th. You will be just thrilled and delighted to have Yogi Amritasai spend some time with you, and we'll have that posted on the website so you can get an advanced preview of that. And thank you, Bill, for helping to bring that forward. We so appreciate that.
You bet.
Now, as we were connecting, we got partway through the book, and people can check out that archive from August 28th and hear part one. And then one of the things, of course, that's going on so much is people are focusing on with all the stress. It's kind of stimulating a lot of us to band together or try to form closer alliances or relationships. And you have a chapter in your book, Thrive Inside, called Create Beautiful Relationships. So I'm wondering if you'd help share what some of the keys that our listeners could be aware of for this goal.
Yeah, of course, Ken. You know, what's so interesting is that most of life is about relationships with other people. And there's a lot of different personal relationships that we have in our life. We have lovers, spouses, children, and relatives. And then we have a whole other set of relationships with our friends and our coworkers. Every relationship that we have stands like a container, and each container offers specific teachings about ourselves. So if we were sitting in a circle here today with all of our listeners, or even a group of 20 complete strangers, and we looked around the circle, there would be some people in the circle that we would find instantly attractive and others that we would not find attractive. And it's only partly related to their physical looks, because remember, we've never met these people before. So we're sitting in a circle, and we say, oh, that person, I would really like to get to know them, and the other person, I don't really want to talk to them. So what it means is there's an energetic connection, an attraction or repulsion between us and these other people that we don't even know. At the other extreme, there's some learning about ourselves, because this attraction repulsion comes because there's something in that person that we actually see of ourselves. And so they're a mirror for us. Every person, every interaction we have with other people is our mirror. It's a mirror for learning. And right now, Ken, you and I continue to learn about each other and ourselves. The listeners are having an interaction, and they're learning about themselves. The difficult part of the relationship is the part about yourself, because most people think of themselves as fixed objects, and it's always the other person that you're putting on the judgment call on. But really, if you flip the coin and look the other side, the lesson is always for you. The lesson in life is always about something that you need to learn to self more fully, to forgive yourself for things. It's always about something for yourself. So I in the course of a daily engagement with other people, when I go to the post office, the store, I always try to look at my reactions to other people, because those reactions are about myself, not so much about them.
Hmm. Wow. Now, that's a novel approach.
Yeah, it's a little different. And what's really interesting, of course, is when you look at the level of button pushing. You know, button pushing is really important. Note at any point in the course of your day when someone pushes your buttons, because it's not what they're doing to you that annoys you, but it's actually your reaction to what they're doing that annoys you. So they could do the same thing to somebody else, and the other person wouldn't have a problem. Imagine right now I said, Ken, look at your hair. Well, you could take that simple statement two ways. You could go, wow, I've got really beautiful hair today. Or you could say, my goodness, what's wrong with my hair? So who's making that decision? It's you that's making the decision. It's your own self-belief system that's always making a decision about anything that you see and hear in life.
Ah, wow. Wow. That's Now, I think we have to kind of dwell on that for a moment, because we're just so used to responding automatically, and now you're asking us to pause a bit and be a little more conscious about this.
Well, you said it perfectly, which is that pause. So what happens is, the minute you have a reaction, pause. Just stop and pause. And instead of looking at the person or thing that's making you agitated, look at your reaction, because this is your mirror, and to find out why you're annoyed. If you remove the button instead of the button pusher, you're going to be a lot happier in life.
Wow. And we have more control over the button or the button, you know, or the people outside of us.
Huh. Well, exactly. Over time, those things, if you keep playing with this, over time, those things don't annoy you anymore. So something that really agitated you 6 months ago will come, and you won't even pay a second notice to it anymore.
Mm. Wow. Now that's just so helpful. And you find is there some like easy way to begin to practice that a little bit? Because I mean, some things push our buttons more than others, so to speak.
Well, the easy way to practice is pretty much what you said, which is the pausing part. So in the course of one day, you know you're going to be agitated by something. Someone cuts in front of you on the highway. Someone says something you don't like. So the minute you catch yourself in agitation, that's the time to look at the button. And it's a pretty easy game to play, because it's very hard to go through the course of one day without getting your button pushed.
Ah, okay. So now I am just wondering, because I don't know about other people, but sometimes a dress rehearsal can be helpful. And when I'm listening to you right now, I'm thinking to myself, you know, sometimes we call it agitation or irritation or pet peeves, which I thought was an animal that it was sick, but it turns out pet peeves aren't that, actually. Anyway, so when we think about those things, I don't know if it would be at all helpful if we sat down and listed a few of them, so that in advance of those situations, we could actually do a little practice on that stuff.
That would be a great idea. You could make a list of the top three things that really annoy you or stress you, and then in the course of any one day, when they come along, you actually might even make a check mark next to them, because you'll start to learn about yourself, about what really agitates you and what doesn't.
Okay. Now, I'm just wondering if I might use myself as an example, and that way I can always call in and complain about being a victim because I picked on myself. For instance, sometimes I get to feeling a little bit sad or upset when I read about something like the oil spill, and start to learn about some of the things going on behind the scenes. There were quite possibly corporate people that knew about different stuff, and then there's been times that I've just been in real judgment of those folks that I perceived as being kind of corporate people that were in a position to do something good for people, and we're ending up causing a lot of harm, and then suffering the no apparent consequences. And there have been times that I've been very upset about that. And I'm just wondering if we used that example, can you help suggest some things that I could look at, you know, in myself as a way to get to a place of more peace?
Yeah, I think that's a great example, because we all have those global things that annoy us, that are bigger than us, and that was partly annoying us because it feels like it's out of our control to do anything. And so what you have to do, in fact, I was in a darshan, a lecture with Yogi Tsai, when somebody asked something similar. They said they saw a lot of violence in one of the cities in the United States, and they felt helpless to do anything about it, and it really annoyed them. And his answer was the same as my answer, which is what you have to do then is you have to just look into yourself. It's your own agitation that you want to get rid of, because if you are calm and peaceful yourself, then you are walking around as a mirror for other people. So the best thing you can do is not worry about the specific things that other people are doing that you don't like. Just constantly keep that space of peace and well-being and love in yourself, and that's the best thing you can do for the world. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Just take that off the plate.
Okay.
That's, I mean, it's hard to do because you see these news stories and you feel helpless, but you're actually empowered to not be agitated by those stories.
Okay. So that helps to break that chain of that conditioned response. When I think about that conditioned response, it's like I haven't seen these in a while, but there's a Jerry Springer show. There's different shows on TV where there's a tremendous amount of anger and conflict expressed about all kinds of victimhood and different people hurting each other and then angry about it and boy, I mean, it's all got a bunch of worked up energy. It's kind of like something on the stove that's there boiling over.
Right, and where we usually feel this energy in our body, at least I can speak for myself, is I feel it. You feel it right in your solar plexus and your stomach. You get agitated, and you feel it in your. That's why you say, "Oh, it makes me feel nauseous." It actually energetically you feel it in your body in that solar plexus area. And so another technique, I'll mention a little bit more of this later in the show, is a technique just to watch your own breathing, because your breath is a reflection of your state of mind. And so what you want to do then, the minute you catch yourself in that reaction, you're watching a news story, and you start to feel it in your stomach, you want to change your breathing pattern. And a little bit later in the practice, we can actually try a breathing pattern to calm us down, which is what we want to do.
Ah, okay. Ah, excellent. Now, as we were, thank you. That, you know, is going to really help us to be able to stand back and take a look at some of these situations. And then one of the things for me, too, that I began to look at is a process of when I'm upset with some of these other people about different things that they're doing. And I started to look at what I call different aspects of self-love or self-care. And I'm seeing that is I've been doing some more things, for instance, connecting to nature. I have what I call my diversity lawn. It's got some grass and it's got about 20 other plants on it. And I go out now and just stand barefoot and sometimes water it, sometimes do yoga on it, or sometimes just lay down and take my Mother Earth nap. And I'm finding that some of that is helping me to shift some of those energies. And as I'm taking more time in caring for myself, I'm noticing that I'm less reactive to some other things that are going on that I consider injustices, because at some level, I'm being more just and loving with myself.
And you hit the nail on the head about how you do it again, which is a lot of people say, well, they take a walk in nature. They'll do something in nature. And the reason that works, they don't know the reason. The reason it works is because nature itself doesn't judge at all. Nature doesn't judge you as a good person or a bad person. So when you immerse yourself in nature, in your garden and with the flowers and stuff, you actually get revitalized because all the judgment comes off the table.
Ah. Yeah, I've never had a tree talk bad about me.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of trees out there that could if they wanted to.
Right.
'Cause I've done a few things that aren't nice. So. Good. All right. Now, just more on our interpersonal stuff. I mean, because is there more we could share about handling what we might call bad or really tough or challenging relationships?
Yeah, I mean, we've all had bad relationships in the course of our life, whether it's with someone that we are very close to or just at a job. And, you know, a bad relationship is just one more mirror for us. So first you have to step back and understand why it's bad and what part you play in the badness. there's an aspect of the magnetism of these relationships that plays out frequently. And what it is, Ken, is that opposites always attract, just like magnets attract. So it's common to find people with opposite personality traits together in a relationship. There's just a natural attraction. And depending upon the specifics of the relationship, the dichotomy can be very healthy or not so healthy. Because of the strong magnetism, it can be challenging for individuals to acknowledge their own role in the relationship. So, for example, a caregiver may be in a relationship with someone who needs care. A person who enjoys control may be in a relationship with someone who has the fears and self-doubts. Or a risk-taker is in a relationship and they don't mind chaos, they're involved with someone who likes stability and control in their life. Introverts and extroverts. So all these things may ring a bell because you probably know someone that feels like the opposite of you, and you have some type of relationship. Now, I'm not trying to imply that you need to actually change. Everything always happens for a reason. But I do believe that your awareness of your role and the energetic magnetism involved in every relationship can give you liberation. Just acknowledging who you are, why you have the relationships that you do have, and what these teachings are, just by sitting back and looking at it that way will open all the doors you need for your own personal discovery and growth.
Mm. Okay.
So never think of a bad relationship, quote, as bad. Think of it as a what's happening here and what am I learning from it?
Okay. Yeah, it'd be like... And I want to get some techniques too from you. I'm just sort of thinking to myself of times of being in judgment. I don't like this person's behavior, and the behavior. Sometimes I'm not able to separate the behavior of a person from their inherent goodness as a divine creature of God.
Right. Right.
Now, I don't know what kind of things can you suggest for us to do.
Well, the other thing I'll say to that is that we all judge people all the time, and what I'm finding more frequently as I look at it is when I judge someone about whatever, I don't like the way they're acting, whatever it is, I'll usually find within a course of 24 hours that I'm doing exactly the same thing that they did. You know, so in many ways we are judging ourselves when we get agitated by other people. But there are some very specific things you can do, and I'll go through a series of three things for you and the listeners that we can try. One is called looking, the other is called breathing, and the third is called grounding. So looking is quite simple. When someone insults you or says something that gets under your skin, what you want to do is silently focus on that place between your eyebrows, which is known as the Ajna chakra, and then also focus on your heart chakra, which is right in your heart center. As you think of that place between your eyebrows, say to yourself, simply disintegrate, disintegrate. And by doing this, it dissipates the energy that you're receiving. Then you focus on your heart energy, and you give that person golden light coming out right from your heart, and imagine surrounding them with golden light. This calms their energy so that the relationship between you and them at that moment will instantly go down a couple of notches and take a heated conversation to a much calmer level, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Huh.
There's something in yoga, they call it, the yoga word is drishti, and drishti is the way you focus your eyes. And what they suggest in the yoga traditions, if you're getting agitated, take your eyes and look out about 3 feet. It doesn't matter where you're looking, just 3 feet is the point. So you can reach out your arm and look at your fingertips. And by looking out at a specific point 3 feet away, that will actually calm down your nervous system.
Mm. Oh, boy, something we didn't know, folks, about how this instrument functions.
Exactly.
Our focal point does have an influence on our state of emotion.
So that's the looking technique. The breathing technique, I think I mentioned before, the breath is an instant reflection. It's the quickest reflection of whether you're agitated. So as soon as you do that pause that you suggested, Ken, and people start checking in, the very next thing you want to do is start checking out with your breathing. And the easiest breath to use to calm yourself down is called the 6-3 count. So what you do, and we can actually try it here while we're talking, First, you inhale to a count of six. So in your mind, you're counting two, three, four, five, six. Then you hold the air in your lungs for a count of three, two, three, and you exhale for a count of six, two, three, four, five, six. Then you hold the air out of your lungs for a count of three, two, three, and then repeat the cycle, inhaling again. But it's that count of six and three. And on the six, you're either inhaling or exhaling, and on the three, you're either holding your air in or out of your lungs. And if you do this as for as little as 30 seconds, I guarantee you'll start to calm down.
Wow. Well, is it something that we might take a moment? Would you guide us through that?
Sure, absolutely. Actually, what I'd like to do instead of that one is fairly simple. I'd like to guide you through a grounding technique.
Okay.
And this grounding technique, what it does is when we get upset, you know, grounding is very important in all spiritual practices because as we spiritually connect with the universe, it's usually upward and out through the top of our head. So a lot of times after you pray or meditate or do something very spiritual, sometimes people get spacey and they aren't attached to what's happening around them. And it's a good feeling, but it's not always the place you want to be. So the grounding techniques makes you very present. So say you're about to do an interview for a job, and you're a little nervous about it. Well, you want to go in grounded so you can be very calm during the job interview. And I describe this in my book, Thrive Inside. And I think if the listeners are interested, they can go to Amazon.com and just keyword Thrive Inside, and they'll come up with my book. And this technique is described in quite some detail. So it's about a minute and a half process, and we might as well do it live on the show. It's kind of fun. So first, sit quietly and make sure you're in a comfortable sitting position. You can be in a chair, on the floor. Doesn't matter where you're sitting. But sit comfortably and then begin to be quiet. And start by imagining the color red or orange. And this is the color that you might see if you've ever seen the Dalai Lama or any of the monks. They've got these deep orange red-like robes. So imagine that color. And then start imagining that color, that orange-red, is around your entire body, like a big circle around your body. Maybe it's about 3 feet wide. And start breathing deeply. And now on your out-breath, as you're breathing out, imagine this bright red-yellow energy is going down into the earth. Down, 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 every time you breathe out. And allow that energy to go out of your body, down to the earth about 3 feet. And first it's going down 3 feet. That's about where the sands are. And the sand is the skin of Mother Earth. And keep breathing, breathing in and out. And now allow that red energy, that red-yellow energy, to go down further, about 20 to 30 feet below you. And that's where the great rocks are. And the rocks below us are the bones of Mother Earth. And as you continue to breathe, allow that energy to go down further, further. Now it's going down about a quarter mile. And a quarter mile, as your energy connects a quarter mile down, is connecting to the gems of the earth. And the gems are like the organs in the human body. And then finally, as you continue to breathe in and out, slowly inhaling and exhaling, feeling that energy going down, down, allow it to go down 2 miles into the deepest part of the earth. And at this deep, deep part of the earth, that's where the great crystals are. And the crystals are the brains of Mother Earth. And now we connect down, and we're grounding into the earth. And now I want you to take your imagination and listen to what's happening around you. First, listen to the sounds of the room around you. see if you can't hear outside the room you're in. Are there any cars, children playing? Allow your mind to go out as far as it will. Now, on the count of three, I'm going to count to three. On the count of three, I want you to take all that outward energy and bring it back in close to your body, about a half an inch away from your skin, almost like a glove going around your skin, and let it come back in and down into that channel you've created into the earth. So I'll count to three, and let it snap back in, just like a rubber band would. One, two, three. Now your energy is snapped back in and envelopes you, and this is your energy and your protection. So now what we have is your energy is close to your body, and you have a connection down into the earth, and you should feel much, much, much more calm than even when we started this simple exercise. And this grounding technique, you can play in your mind. You don't even have to say it out loud. You can just do this mentally, silently to yourself. Anytime you find yourself in reaction, or you're about to be nervous because of something you know is happening in the next hour or so, ground yourself like this and see how calm and present you can make yourself feel before you go into that environment. So I hope that I hope that resonated with you and some of the listeners as we tried it.
Yeah. That is that's definitely something that's brief, but some real good quality time well spent. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess there's this and some other things, as you were mentioning in your book, Thrive Inside.
Yeah, I have a lot of different techniques. I mean, I try to make them so simple, because if a technique is too complicated, we will forget it and we won't be able to use it. So it's got to be something you can apply in your life very quickly. I mean, we get stressed out very quickly, so we need something that's going to ground us pretty quickly too.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'm guessing is that as we do this a number of times, it becomes easier to just call this forth.
Well said. What it is, you're actually entraining your body, your mind to react just to the process, so it does come much, much quicker.
Yeah, so when someone says, well, you don't seem very grounded, it's like, okay, if a person's never been taught what it is like to be grounded and then practiced it a little bit, so that then they can be, as you say, entrained or train themselves to do that. I mean, we had to learn all kinds of things in our lives, and control over our excretory functions, urination, defecation. And now we're just kind of getting smarter as we learn a little bit more about what you're wanting to share, yoga and different practices. That some of our training, if we take this into account and make it a part of our lives, and we're never too old to learn, all of a sudden a lot of things get better.
Never too old to learn. Very important part. A lot of us think that it's too hard, but these are things that are available to us throughout our entire life.
Wow! I love it. And I know you share in your book, as we're talking about relationships, I think two important things of forgiveness and compassion. And don't know, would you please address a little bit of that for us?
Yeah, on this part, Ken, I thought I've got just a couple of paragraphs from my book that I'll read, and I think they describe the importance of forgiveness and compassion so well. And what it is to accept your own weaknesses and those of other people. This brings you closer to your own energy body. When you totally accept what is present with non-judgmental awareness, it can change your future. You become comfortable and in harmony with yourself and with others. Rejection, guilt, jealousy, hatred of yourself or others all start to dissolve. You remain in choiceless awareness with what is present at the moment. Every time your mind comes in with its reaction, emotions, or thoughts, go back to your energy body, which lives in the present moment. This is where healing occurs. Acceptance in the present moment is critical for acceptance in the future. Forgiveness goes hand in hand with compassion. In fact, forgiveness creates compassion for yourself. This is a win-win activity that brings harmony and success into life. Your mind may say, I will never forgive so-and-so for this and that. It appears to both your mind and your ego that a lack of forgiveness, possibly even outright revenge, will ultimately create the harmony. And you sort of mentioned that in how we feel about the oil situation. If the other person finally receives the same treatment that you got, or some form of punishment, then you think that everything's going to be even and you can move on. Unfortunately, that's not what happens. Instead of creating a net zero effect, you actually will add to the original offense. That is why rivalries and wars spiral upwards. Even if somebody wins, this only creates a temporary holding pattern until the other party begins to have an opportunity to get even. So harmony and forgiveness are two key things, and you want to do it both for the other person as well as for yourself. And the way you don't want to forgive someone, sometimes I've heard people say, oh, well, I really forgive them. And you can tell in the tone of their voice what they're saying is, I'm a better person than they are because I forgive them. That's still not forgiveness. What that's doing is that's giving you power over them by saying you're better than they are. Real forgiveness is you mean you really, really forgive them. When the Pope was asked, the last Pope, not the current one, before they had the Popemobile, and he was shot by that guy who was trying to assassinate him, someone finally said, how long did it take for you to forgive the guy that shot you? And he said it took him exactly 1 minute. And he said that he felt that was long, but it took in 1 minute he had completely forgiven him for being shot. And he did it, he said, both for the other person and for himself.
Mm. Wow. So forgiveness as an act of self-love. That's interesting.
Right, that's what it is. Who else really is there to forgive? There's nobody else except yourself.
Oh my goodness. It's sort of like it's interesting because here we are talking about relationships, and then it kind of sometimes loops back into the main relationship being with ourselves, and then by improving that, improving the relationship with those around us.
Yeah, you just said it. That one sentence can solve everyone's problems. Everything is about your relationship with yourself. Nothing else at all matters.
Wow. I sure enjoy reading your book, and I hope I want to recommend this to all the listeners out there to go to Amazon.com and type in Thrive Inside, so that you can spend some quality time, because realistically, you take a look at how you're spending your time, and here's an opportunity to spend some time with the energy of Bill Eager, a kind, loving soul that built a loving life for himself and spent time in that building of the loving life with some really wonderful people traveling the world and doing some interesting things. So, you could go all those places, or sometimes if that's not in the budget, you can grab onto a book like Thrive Inside and really go on some adventures with quality energy, like Bill, and follow some of this good advice. So I highly recommend that you give yourself this treat. And now I'm also wondering, because when we're working with others, in the team sport of life and doing different things, there's this term called co-creation. And can you talk about that a bit, or share some of that, so that building a better life, better relationships?
Well, absolutely, Ken. I can tell just by the way you quickly take what I say and bring it back that you really get these things. So co-creation is the idea that anything you want to manifest in your life, any success or any dream you have, ultimately depends upon the engagement of others. So where you have to forgive yourself and be comfortable in your own skin for how you feel about things, you're always going to need other people. Frequently, we'll take our ideas and we'll pass them on to other people. And this can be done in the spirit of sharing and the spirit of co-creation. Sharing is when you freely give your ideas to someone else because you can actually know that they'll be, give birth to them or you can't. So a lot of times you'll meet a friend, you go, oh, you know, here's a great idea I have. And all you're doing is giving them some ideas. It's like consulting with your friends. And your ideas are not so much that you want to create them, you want to give them to other people to let them move them forward. Co-creation is a little bit different than this. With co-creation, either you're going to ask other people to help birth your ideas, or you're going to help them birth their ideas. So you're working together. And done well, co-creation is an action that acknowledges and employs all the positive aspects of our independence and interdependence with other people. Co-creation is essential if your thought forms are going to move into the physical world. We can do a lot of things by ourselves, but in almost every instance, it requires the assistance of others to realize our dreams. You could sit in the closet, for example, and design a building or write a book or create a song or envision world peace, and that could be the end of it, and that's perfectly okay. But if you come out of your closet, then creating all those things that I just mentioned are not really going to happen unless you're going to co-create with other people. Ultimately, even the conversation we're having right now, we're co-creating because we like to play together, but we also are doing it for the people that are listening. So this is a group effort is the point of this.
Yes. All right. Now, there's a part, I love this in your book. I'd like you to talk about, there's what we call fixed and free dancing and seeding and birthing. Could you go into some of those?
I love that one, Ken. Well, basically, in life, there's two ways to play. And let me give you an analogy with baseball, since I actually went to some Rockies games this summer. The concept of fixed dancing is that in a baseball team, you have a certain number of players, and where they go out in the field and stand, that's gonna be fixed because that's how they play the game. You know, same with football. So that's fixed. What's free is that the moment the ball is pitched or thrown, everything goes into free fall, right? At that point in time, nobody knows where they're going to be the next 2 seconds. So you're combining this concept of something that's very fixed with free dancing. Our day-to-day, for example, we may have had an idea this morning of what we want to do, what we want to accomplish, maybe even have a list of things to do. That's the fixed space that you're working in. Now what you and I have to do is, and all of our listeners, we have to dance in that space and be open to the fact that the very specific details of the day may not go exactly according to our plan. So we have to learn to constantly surrender to the little details and let them take care of themselves. Yogi Desai says it slightly differently. He says you always want to be to the point where you're consciously doing something and then surrendering. So, for example, in the yoga pose, first you get into the yoga pose, and then you surrender. You do, and then you let go of all doing. And all day long we do this, but we don't sometimes do it consciously. But the idea of doing something and then surrendering to the outcome of it is very, very important. Because if you don't surrender, if you don't let things happen naturally, you get very frustrated very, very quickly.
Wow. You know, as you were saying that, I was just thinking of chewing, and then swallowing.
Mm-hmm.
Where we let it go.
That's nice. Right. That's another great example. I mean, when you start to play with it, you realize everything is that way. Everything is like something you're doing and then something you're letting happen.
Oh, wow. Wow, how fun. Okay.
It's really fun.
Yeah. And then this seeding and birthing, is it?
Yeah, so seeding and birthing are related to the idea of the fixed and free dancing. So seeding is when I plant an idea. And I don't know if anyone saw the movie Inception this summer with DiCaprio. But in that movie, it was showing us how Hollywood does this. But it's actually quite accurate. Seeding is like an idea that you put into your head or someone else's head. But how long does it take to have a seed sprout out of the ground? Well we don't really know, right? But what we do know is that imagine you planted a real seed in the ground. You do know for sure that putting more water on it, putting more fertilizer, standing there watching it, anything like that is not going to make the plant grow out of the ground faster, right?
Right.
So the concept here is quite simple, is that once you seed an idea, you know, maybe it was you and I talking about this radio show, and you said, Bill, would you like to come on the show again? As soon as that idea is out there, you don't need to ask me again, right? You've done it once. Where people get frustrated is they'll make a phone call. Maybe it's for they want to get a job or they want to have a date, whatever it is. And then when they don't get an answer, like within 5 minutes, they feel like they're not being responded to. So they call again, and then they call, and then they start getting frustrated that they're not getting a call back. Once you put it out there that you'd like something to happen, my advice is simply let it go. If it comes back, great. If it doesn't come back, it was not supposed to come back to you. Otherwise, you're just going to be trying to make that plant grow, and it doesn't want to grow.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Wow. Okay. So, what I like in that process that if there's some advice of that you'd have about the ability when we're putting out effort and we would like something to happen, and then it's not any thoughtful ways that we can be more about this, able to let it go. Because I know times in my life where I was so attached to the outcome that if it wasn't working out, then I was just upset and what didn't I do? What could I do? Well, on and on and on. And just, oh my gosh, it was so much effort and struggle.
Well, you just described it perfectly, which is you got stressed because of the outcome, and we all do. So it's not a judgment call, but the suggestion is don't get attached to any outcome at all. So rather than thinking, oh, it's got to look like this, I've got to get the red car, whatever it is, start to stand back after you've put out the idea, I want to buy a car. Don't worry about whether it's red or green. Whatever it is, start to chill a little bit on the exact outcome, and you're going to leave a much happier, more graceful life. And I know that it's very hard to do, but too often we try to seed and birth very, very quickly, and the universe doesn't always want to move that quickly. You know, when someone gets pregnant, it's 9 months, give or take, but it's not going to be 2 months. There's a certain amount of time that it needs to take for things to birth.
Hmm. Yes. It's nice to have a frame of reference that there are things like that in our lives where there are processes, and we have become peaceful with the amount of time it takes for that.
Right, exactly.
And so that to me is a nice reminder that that they're, you know, birthing, we know for that takes 9 months. Is it an elephant that's 18 months?
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't go check in after 9 months with an elephant. You've got to wait 18. And there's a Chinese bamboo tree I've heard about that you plant the seed and nothing happens for 5 years. It just sits dormant underground, and then in about a 60-day period, the thing shoots up like 30, 40 feet or something. It's amazing.
Well, and I would say possibly with the exception, one exception of your clock that is offered, all other forms of technology make us nervous. So people use email, and they expect to get an email response in 32 seconds. Well, I only get the mail from the post office once a day. You know, you have to be calm about things.
Yeah, and... And I think to me that leads me to the chapter in your book about connecting to source, because with so many things in the world not going as fast as we would like them to for our convenience or for our goals or ambitions, where can we turn where something is always there for us?
Well, exactly, and I think this is a great way, as we're coming up to the end of the show, to talk about it. And what it is about love. Unconditional love always provides an immediate connection to your source. Through love, everything is possible that's not possible through the medium of our minds. Love, of course, is actually a manifestation of our energy and our consciousness. And when you channel love, you directly transmit all the properties that come with love to all the world. The heart center is your center to access and transmit love. So you can get and receive love from other people, but you can't hold on to love. Love itself is fluid. It's like water and energy. And the force of love moves through us, and we can direct it, but we don't own it, right?
Yeah.
So the moment love and ego is separated, it's when you bring ego in, it's no longer love. Ego, it puts an artificial wrapper around love. It says something like this. It says something like, "Ken, I will love you as long as you do blank. Fill in the blank." That is not unconditional love. So unconditional love is feeling loved and giving love without expecting anything in return. And this is an aspect that connects us to our source. When we feel deeply loved and we are giving deep love to other people, then we are connected to the best that we can be as human beings.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Well put. I love that. And that's certainly something that I guess is part of the reason why we would get your book, Thrive Inside, to help us spend quality time thinking about that and practicing it, because I don't know that it's something that a person absolutely learns and then lives from every moment of their life as much as something that we strive to do on a daily basis.
Exactly. And we always know when we feel love because it's such a strong, powerful feeling. It comes in, it rushes in and we feel fantastic. But that's the mistake. But at that point in time, we try to hold on to it. We just have to realize it's fluid and let it keep doing what it needs to do all the time, and we'll be much happier.
Mm, I like that. And then a chapter in your book titled "Create Sacred Space." Would you talk about what you mean by that and how we achieve it?
Yeah, I'm sure that we've all gone into churches, or we've gone into ancient structures, or possibly even a yoga studio. And by walking, the minute we walked in, we felt some energy in that space was special. It was sacred space, and we felt in harmony. And some of the great churches of the world, I've been to some of the really, really large ones, and you just feel over the centuries so much love and harmony has been brought in there that you walk into it and you feel it right in your body. I mean, you can hardly describe it because it's just such a feeling, so words don't do it justice. Well, every space has the potential to be sacred. And in sacred religious locations, the people that worship there, the people provide the constant attention to the space. So whether they be Christian or Buddhist, it doesn't matter. They're giving this loving attention to the physical space. So we can start to do the same to our homes and our offices. And prayer, of course, is one method to do this. So we want to bring that feeling of love into a physical environment because we want that environment to feel like love. The second part of that is that we have to realize that our own bodies, that we are actually sacred space. That body-mind-spirit connection, all working together, is actually a sacred entity. So we want to start with ourselves. That's why we want to learn about love ourselves, and then bring that into the sacred space. So people always say, "Well, where do I start?" Well, there's so many directions. I don't want to say you just have to do one thing and don't do something else. There's a lot of ways you can start to feel love and feel clean. One of the ways that Native Americans do it, of course, is they use smudging ceremonies where they simply use some type of sage, to energetically clean their body. And you can do the same thing with a physical environment. You can smudge a space just so it starts to be clean of any negative energies.
Mm, okay. Wow, I like that. And I was thinking to myself, creating sacred space was, we may have had an experience at some point in our lives where someone blew us a kiss.
Yeah, that's nice.
And so I was thinking of that we could do that if we're on our way home, or if we're walking through our house and wanting to make it more sacred. To send some kisses out. So many different ways that we can have ceremony to bring that feeling of love present.
Right, and just as you mentioned earlier, Ken, the whole trick of it is just to practice it. So whatever works for you, it's not for you and me to tell people exactly what to do. It's for people to find what makes them feel loving and happy, and then practice that again and again so that it becomes a more of a common practice, and then it starts to radiate in their lives and in their physical spaces.
Yeah, yeah. So folks, if if you are going to have a devotion or an addiction, there can be very similar, we'd recommend choosing love.
Absolutely.
Well, gosh, Bill, it's the time just flies when you're here. I know my listeners love it. I love it, and I just wanted to thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to bring us the joy of your life and remind us about Thrive Inside, your book at Amazon.com. And we'll just thank you. Thank you so much and wish you a lot of success in what you're doing to help us learn more about this as you continue with more books or different workshops that we can find on the ThriveInside.net website. Is that right?
That's it, thriveinside.net or amazon.com, Thrive Inside. And, Ken, it's always a pleasure to work with you. I really enjoy it a lot.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And to you, Bill, to my beloved listeners, I would just say God bless and goodbye for now.